As I often do while waiting to go on air, I sit here and I read a book, and in this case, it's a play. It's Oscar Wilde's The Importance of Being Earnest, and I was just smiling at what Lady Bracknell said. To lose one parent, Mr. Worthing, may be regarded as a misfortune. To lose both looks like carelessness. Why does Wilde's famous saying seem appropriate when talking about Westpac's complete failure to pick up 23 million contraventions of Australian anti-money laundering legislation? Well, you know, to lose one parent. There are multiple inquiries going on. Beside the charges laid by AUSTRAC, the corporate regulator ASIC has confirmed in its investigation that Westpac and... it's investigating Westpac, the prudential regulator, APRA, the Australian Federal Police, also on the case. And one area that needs to be looked at is a subject we've often covered over the years on this program, remittances. Now, remittances are the often tiny payments that migrants send back to their home countries. Lewis De Coker is Professor of Law at La Trobe in Melbourne, and he's in our Melbourne studio. And I welcome him to the Little Wireless Program.
Good evening, Philip. Great to be with you.
Lewis, when AUSTRAC, our anti-money laundering regulator, charged Westpac last week, what did you think? You think personally about the scale of the charges?
Philip, I think we were all blown away by the scale of the charges. Not by the number as such, because often one small mistake in modern banking can actually have a fairly big footprint. What concerned me more was the scope of the charges that revealed kind of the scope of the failures in the Westpac systems.
Continue. I'm all agog.
All right. Perhaps just to take one step back, what is this all about? This is not about merely compliance with laws. Money laundering laws have been adopted by countries around the world. This is a global system. To bring banks into the law enforcement partnership with government, basically, they have eyes on financial transactions because they handle them. And those transactions often either fund crime or involve proceeds of crime. So what is expected of banks is to know who they're dealing with, so-called know your customer obligations, and they need to monitor the transactions and then report suspicious behavior to a regulator, in our case it's AUSTRAC, and other reportable transactions. So, for instance, under our law, all international funds transfers need to be reported. So that's basically what needs to be done. What went wrong in this case was that Westpac adopted a system, its own system, because it deemed the global banking payment channel, SWIFT, too expensive. So it developed its own system, although it continued to use SWIFT, for certain transactions and certain partnerships. And those partnerships with banks and this channel involved millions of transactions, more than 19 million, apparently. But because of insufficient controls and insufficient information requirements, those transactions couldn't be unpacked. If they had passed through the SWIFT system, Westpac would have been able to ensure that all reportable transactions were reported. But because they passed it through their own system that did not have sufficient information requirements, they were blind to what had to be reported. For years on end, while international banks got fined for not reporting transactions, while the SWIFT system developed additional information fields because the previous fields were too limited, while all of this was playing itself off, Westpac was unfortunately tone deaf to what was required.
Tell us about the remittance industry.
The remittance, I wouldn't call it an industry. Remittances is a global phenomenon of great importance to developing nations. Many developing nations export labour. People go to other countries to work, especially for work opportunities, and as they work, often low-paid work, they save small amounts of money. And this they send back home to family members, often to build up a nest egg, sometimes to build a house, sometimes just to pay school fees of family members, or for a funeral.
As you say, and we're talking about tiny amounts, but in the aggregate, it's vast and it's of crucial importance to millions of people.
And to certain countries. If we look at the Pacific, a small nation like Tonga, remittances account for 40% of its GDP. So these funds, the fund flows are viewed as vital. And yet, if you look at the Pacific has one of the most expensive remittance channels, which means for every $100 that a person can send, they end up paying $12 to $15 in fees just for the privilege of sending the money.
Heavens above.
So DFAT has been working quite hard with the global community to bring down those costs. And we've had a network of small community-based providers that actually provided services to remittance communities in Australia cheaply. Now, this is also a space in which big US-based companies like Western Union and MoneyGram is very active, but often they are more expensive and they tend to be focused on urban areas, not rural areas.
Lewis, forgive me for interrupting, but we should bring it back to Westpac. They just haven't helped here in the area you're describing, have they?
No, because in 2014, they became one of the lead Australian banks to close down all accounts of small remitters because they said it posed too high a risk. They said the compliance costs were too high. Because they said they were required to identify each individual remitter's individual customers, not only the remitter, which by that stage was regulated and registered with AUSTRAC as a business, but they said we also needed to identify the customers. The International Standard Setting Body, the Financial Action Task Force, made it clear that this was not a requirement under international anti-money laundering standards, but that did not impact on Westpac's decision.
So, Lewis, because it's an immensely complex subject and we've got limited time, tell me about LitePay's role.
So having closed down the accounts of small remitters, about 18 months later, Westpac opened its own channel called LitePay to provide cheap remittance services to specific remittance communities, starting with the Philippines. It now transpired that despite its concern about the risk posed by small remitters, its risk control measures in respect of LitePay were inadequate. They were not responsive enough to changing risk scenarios, including child exploitation, despite information being provided by AUSTRAC.
It's interesting that one of the explanations Westpac has given for not picking up on these illegal payments is to blame computer software, but isn't that like the dog ate my homework?
Absolutely. And in the Commonwealth Bank case, there was a glitch. In this case, it did not appear to be a glitch. We need far more information to understand that explanation.
You're very angry about how Westpac, a bank whose name literally means or derives from West Pacific, has withdrawn financial services from the Pacific.
Absolutely. Over the years, especially in respect of small remitters, we've seen the destruction of these small businesses in vulnerable communities where they provided jobs and where they provided safe remittance channels cheaply to community members. This was destroyed. Westpac moved into the space and then failed to manage the risk. And now, Philip, their response to this is not to fix the problem, it's to close down LitePay, which is ironic because Allstrack last week in their list of charges said that Westpac had actually fixed the LitePay problems, especially in relation to child exploitation, last year. The big concern was that it took long, and then the big concern was that they failed to extend similar child exploitation monitoring to non-LitePay channels. And Westpac's response to that is to close down LitePay.
Westpac, of course, have also circled the wagons, and although everyone seems to be calling for some big heads to roll, at the moment they're resisting.
They are. It seems as if the pressure is ramping up. I really think we need to think clearly about what we want done under these circumstances. We saw a $700 million fine for Commonwealth Bank. We believe in this case the fine may be bigger. But if it is, it's us, the investors and the customers of the bank, that end up paying that bill. All of those costs are just passed on to us. What needs to be done is that accountability need to sheet back to those who took the decisions, and not only the current board, also the previous boards. This has been happening for years, Philip. So I understand that the current board feels under pressure, and I think they should rightly feel under pressure and be put under pressure. But that pressure should also be extended to all others who received very significant bonuses over the years for jobs that now turn out to be not close to well done.
And as you point out, this is not just the current regime. It goes back a few, quite a while, and with previous managements.
It does. In respect of child exploitation, the response plan of Westpac adopted this weekend is to make $54 million available to organisations that combat child exploitation, and that is good.
But it's pocket money, isn't it, in the scheme of things?
It is, and it would have been good to pass the hat around to those who receive bonuses to contribute to that, because in the end, it's still investors and depositors that will fund that money, and I'm sure will do so gladly, but it would be good
I share your indignation, Lewis, and I'm sure most of the listeners do as well. And thank you very much for coming on and explaining what the hell is going on and why. I've been talking to Professor Lewis De Coker, who's Professor of Law at La Trobe University's Law School.